Blog Talk Radio.
Chapter 1, The Tan Negro.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006.
Well, good evening. Good evening. Good evening to all of our internet listeners. We are still waiting for our panelists and guests to come on to the studio telephone conference hookup so we can actually have our family room forum discussion for this evening. But since we know that there are those of you who like to tune in via the internet, we don't want to keep you waiting any longer. And so we are going to go ahead and begin while we wait for the panelists that will join us hopefully in a few minutes to discuss the topic to come on board. So tonight's topic is this: is the opportunity to earn a college degree from an HBCU with less than a 40% graduation rate, where less than half of the students traditionally will finish, which obviously will lower the academic reputation of the school? Is the opportunity to earn a college degree from an HBCU with less than a 40% graduation rate worth going into tens of thousands of dollars of student loan debt? That's the question that we want to get your opinions about. So those of you who are listening via the internet, if you would like to join us tonight to actually talk about that particular topic, we'd like for you to call in to our studio. The number is 657-383-0671. 657-383-0671. So if you have some thoughts on that topic, is the opportunity to earn a college degree from an HBCU with less than a 40% graduation rate worth going into tens of thousands of dollars of student loan debt? If you'd like to offer your opinion about that, please go ahead and give us a call at the number that I just read. And I do want to give some background information about that particular topic. And so what we're going to do actually is look at an article that appeared, actually a website article that appeared on the ABC News, and see what was reported concerning this issue. We're just waiting, hoping that some others will join us where we can read this and they can hear it, and then we can talk about it from the perspective of this news report. I'm actually in the process now of bringing it up. So basically, as we wait for the internet to make the connection with the article, basically it's saying that these particular students at historically black colleges and universities, that when they were surveyed, they said that they would only cast their ballots during the 2020 presidential election for candidates that will come and address the topic of how these candidates plan to give relief to the students that are burdened by this tremendous student loan debt. And I see we just had two callers to join us. And so for the benefit of the callers that are joining us, I see our dear friend and brother, Mr. Jesus Muhammad Ali, has joined us. And we want to welcome you and bring you on in just a minute, Minister Jesus Muhammad Ali, the grandson of the Honorable, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, leader of the African American, and I say that actually with the qualification, I started to say African American Nation of Islam in America, but during the time that he was alive, even had a Caucasian American lady by the name of Sister Dorothy Farnon, who was a member of the Nation of Islam. There may have been others that I don't know about. Maybe Jesus Muhammad Ali might know more, but I do know that she was one. And also, I know that there were quite a number of Mexican Americans. I knew one very well myself, Minister Perez from California. There were others too I met while I was in California. And then, of course, we know that he reached out to the Native American population. And so it wasn't just Nation of Islam for African Americans, but actually for humanity, when you think about it. I would have said all people of color, but we know Sister Dorothy Farnon was a Caucasian, so he was really ready to welcome, as his son, Imam Wallace D. Muhammad did, members of the human family into the Nation of Islam. Anyway, Minister Jesus Muhammad Ali, I wanted to preface my bringing you on by giving a little background on your grandfather's mission and his work, and we'll bring you on in just a second. Let me go ahead and repeat the topic. It's the opportunity to earn a college degree from an HBCU with less than a 40% graduation rate, worth going into tens of thousands of dollars of student loan debt. Right now, Mr. Jesus Farmer, you and I are the only ones on, so the conversation will basically be your input and my input. There was a sister who just came on. She primarily likes to just listen, and she may come back on. But since she knew that you and I were on, she may just want to sit back and listen. She prefers just to do that. But anyway, going back to the news article on ABC News, the key thing is talking about South Carolina primarily, which is also known as the Palmetto State because of its state plant. It says that the Palmetto State has some of the fastest growing student debt in the country, jumping between $5.6 billion and $23.1 billion from 2008 through 2018. Nationally, the average white student loan borrower has roughly $30,000 of student loan debt, while African Americans have an average of nearly $34,000, according to data from the Center for Responsible Lending. The disparities grow after graduation. A 2017 report from the Brookings Institute found student debt among black college students to be at crisis levels, And the report showed black students graduating with a bachelor's degree were defaulting, meaning not paying back their loans, or not paying back as agreed, at five times the rate of their white counterpart. We'll just read one more part, and we'll bring on Minister Jesus Muhammad Ali for your response. But it says, as historically black colleges and universities continue to struggle with limited federal funding, students attending these institutions with families that tend to have a lower income are left with limited financial resources, causing them to amass larger amounts of debt in hopes, and this is the key point, in hopes, key word here is hopes, that higher education, meaning a college baccalaureate or higher degree, bachelor's or higher degree, will lead to a more successful future. Now that's where we're going to stop. But the point is that these students have no guarantee that getting this bachelor's degree will get them into a position where they will have a more successful future than if they didn't amass this student loan debt, averaging in the tens of thousands of dollars, average of $34,000 for the bachelor's degree. It's just that they hope that they'll get a better position than if they didn't have this degree and all this student loan. So, Minister Jesus Muhammad Ali, thank you for being with us tonight. Welcome to Booker T. Washington Speaks African American Family Room Forum. I'm turning on your mic now. What's your response?
As-salamu alaykum, brother. Amen. He said, thank you for inviting me on and the beautiful presentation. Yeah, I'm taking a few notes on some of the things you outlined. Thank you also for the listening audience. Used to be the American dream was the first to own your own house and amass some level of equity in your own home in order to fall back on that in your senior years. And then the second thing, if not, in tandem, would be to try to, be sure that your children receive a proper education. These were considered to be some of the primary ideals when it came to the American dream. In 08, we saw all of those realities crushed, because, as you mentioned, the student debt, the homes, in 08, I can think of it in Nevada, I think there was almost like 60% of the houses were underwater. It's across the board, really, across the country. People walking away from their homes because they owed more than their homes were worth. That's what, that's what underwater means. But so they, and then with the student loans, it's really an atrocity, when it comes to the student loan situation. And as you mentioned, so eloquently, and you presented the case, and you also pointed out a disparity between African Americans and as applies to Caucasians, who the African Americans have five times as many will default on their debt, and then you point out too that it's a hope that, and you put a big emphasis on the word hope, that this BA bachelor's degree in some area would afford them a better opportunity in the job market. But there's a lot of statistics that fly in the face of that perception. I know Dr. King, he was saying education, education, education. you know, but, you know, trade skills, you know, it's, you know, currently here in the Detroit area, I'm not sure what's happening in other parts of the country, but, you know, the idea of trade skills, you know, and they're beginning to, on the radio, point out how much money can be earned by garnering trade skills. You know, with $1 trillion of debt, during the Wall Street sit out, and, you know, they and then they pointed this out, you know, and how 1%, ten percent of the 1% control 99% of the wealth in this country. There's never been such a disparity in the history of this country, where 10% of the 1% controls 99% of the wealth. That's even during World War II, I think 43 families control, you know, more than the major wealth in this country. But 10% of the 1%, that's atrocious. Okay, saddled with debt, they found out that these college children, due to the fact that America has exported its labor base, you know, to Mexico, China, India, you know, Bangladesh, these factors have come home to haunt the American family, because oftentimes, just to try to offset these student loans that you can't even come out from under, without, even if you file bankruptcy, you can't escape these loans. So you have this, you know, big burden, you know, on your back, just trying, you know, which means you're working, you know, primarily, you know, when you come out of college, you're working from a negative point. You're deep in debt, and you're trying to work your way out of debt. And when these children, young people, get, you know, begin to show some level of acclimate, you know, then they become these debt mongers, you know, with these credit cards and other things, other ways of getting the children, young people, further and further in debt. You know what I mean? They become more aggressive. Okay, it's you know, these kind of these kind of realities. You know, I remember when hearing how when President Obama bailed out, came up with the Wall Street bailout. He sent someone over there to Wall Street, you know, and they said that the reporter could not even, you know, give an accounting as to what President Obama, his address was to the people on Wall Street. He said because they were using so much derogatory language. You know what I mean? Leveraging debt, you know what I mean, in such a way where they have, you know, they have people, you know, whereas they make money when you default on the debt. And they got ways they have odds against, you know, saddling people with huge amounts of debt, and then they have these hedge funds. They say, well, if they default, then we're gonna still collect. I mean, there's a movie called Wall Street, you know, with Michael Douglas, you know, that really brings this whole subject home for people who are not aware of these kind of things. I think they said they had at that time $70 trillion, and the whole economy is only worth 14 now. they were sitting around the table talking, there was $70 trillion out there someplace, you know, and if the government didn't come in, you know what I mean? And so naturally the average person, it becomes totally disoriented, you know, trying to just wrap their minds around, you know, what these clever, you know, people are here in a capitalistic system. When you're in a capitalistic system, that means nothing is above money, you know, human life, you know, whatever. You gotta have to have insurance, you know, in order to, because you know you wind up in a situation with a very catastrophic illness, and you're at the emergency room. You'll find out how important money and the difference between the kind of care you're going to be afforded, you know, what kind of plans you have in place. You know, anyway, you know, that's, you know, kind of straying away from the subject. But this topic that you brought to the table this evening, it's really disorientating, you know, when you think about it, you know what I mean, in terms of, you know, the value systems, you know, that have become antiquated, you know what I mean, you know, when you think about it, because of the greed, that was one of the things that was center stage in that movie with Michael Douglas called Wall Street, is that greed, you know, has become legal. I mean, as a matter of fact, that's, you know, just, you know, in 2008, when President Obama was nominated to be president, you know, received the Democratic nomination to become president, you know, according to the BBC, America had $43 trillion in debt, you know, that's the national debt. And he brought it down to $14 trillion in 1 year. And, you know, I was listening to a program with Charlie Rose. You know, he was interviewing one of the nephews for one of the Saudi princes at that time, Saudi Prince Abdullah. No, King. He was the nephew of King Abdullah. You know, he was managing $25 billion in real estate assets for, you know, himself. You know, in many resorts, hotels, things of that nature. And he was the one that, you know, was saying to Charlie Rose how, you know, his, you know, finger on the pulse of the American financial community, and how it was the fact that America was able to, you know, come down from 43 to 14 trillion in 1 year. They say it was phenomenal that, you know, that American people could have done that, or, you know, they were able to make such an adjustment. But now it's back up to about 22 trillion, I think, you know, because, you know, it's something like, you know, if you go underwater and you come up out of the water too fast, you get a case of the bends. There's been various analogies to explain that, because even under President Obama, he had to do some, adjustments. You know, it wasn't 22 when President Trump came to office, but, you know, he had pushed it out, I think, 18, 19 trillion, you know, from the 14 that he brought it down to, because, you know, anyway, so, but all the, you know, all of these things, when it comes to the average, you know, family household, I mean, trying to structure their budget, you know, when it comes to the basic, you know, finances to run a home, you know, and, you know, you got your food, your gas, your car, insurance, you know, on the car, and hope we got some life insurance in place, you know, just in case, you know, something like that, unforeseen situation develops, you know. So, you know, those, you know, mortgage, you know, rent, you know, gas, light, you know, these are, you know, like just trying to keep both oars in the water, so to speak. So these kinds of things. So when you start talking about the things that we're talking about, you know, and they become like, you know, just completely disorientating. You know what I mean? People they can't, and they're so busy trying to keep food on the table and trying to keep the lights on and keep the rent, you know, paid, you know, and make sure that they're getting a decent wage on the job. You know, or jobs that they have to and take. I've heard these students. As a matter of fact, they've taken up panhandling in many cases. I'm sometimes able to recognize these students out panhandling, because panhandlers, you know, depending on what city you're in, panhandlers have been known to bring $300 or $400 home. Okay, and then these young students have I've heard many cases where they have wind up taking jobs that they could have just as easily held down coming out of grammar school, much less high school. You know what I mean? I mean, flipping hamburgers at McDonald's and, you know, things like that with a bachelor's degree, they're just willing to take anything just, you know, to try to maintain self dignity. Yeah, but this is a very interesting subject you brought up this evening, Amosa. Yes, sir. I don't want to skip over anything that you brought to the table. You mentioned about my grandfather, and you referred to his being the leader, Mayor Peter Mercer. So, you said African American. I never heard him use that word. Actually, African American. I heard him. I know he in his lifetime, cause, you know, on his book, let's see, Message to the Black Man in America. He had expressed some level of, being. Disparaged, you know, when the press labeled us black Muslims. He said, we're Muslims. You got a billion people in India, another billion in China. I mean, if you took a head count to find out how many people in China, how many people in India, to include Pakistan, who would certainly be deemed as being people of color. I mean, I know the Chinese are considered to be mongoloid rather than quote-unquote negroid, but nevertheless, they're not quote-unquote white. So therefore, you know, anything other than white, you know, then that would fall upon the umbrella of being quote-unquote colored, okay, you know, according to the social norm standards oftentimes used to identify. But, you know, you mentioned about a Caucasian sister being a member of the Nation of Islam. You know, when I was in school, I'm talking about, I started school at 3.5 years old, going to the University of Islam, a parochial school set up and established by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Originally, you know, because Master Farad Muhammad, you know, we please him, mercy on him, he told my grandfather, you don't allow people who are shown to be, you know, open enemy when it comes to subjugating and oppressing you. You don't let them, teach, your children. So, my grandmother even went to wind up going to jail because she wouldn't allow her children to go to public school. But she was very, and like even my father, my father's generation. My father, who became a U.S. ambassador, Muhammad Ali's manager, you know, first editor of the Muhammad Speech newspaper, you know, he a multimillionaire in his own rights. He couldn't show you a grammar school diploma he earned in the classroom. No more so than my grandfather, you know, and the Honorable Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. So, you know, mother wit and common sense, okay, you know, in today's world, you'll find, you know, I remember even Minister Malcolm, you know, I mentioned that brother, you know, he was up there at Harvard University, one of the most collegiate educational systems in this country, and he was up there calling blacks then back in the 50s. He said, "Educated fools," because you know, anytime you don't apply common sense and you got all this book knowledge, okay, book knowledge, you know, even the current president, he says some things that have some merit of sobriety. You know, when he talks about, you know, common sense, you know what I mean? You know, some people get so, you know, they say, inundated into, you know, academia, you know, quote unquote, you know, until they lose all, you know, perspective of, you know, of common sense. And oftentimes morality too, you know, because they figure that they're above being. I mean, anytime you have a president, shortly before the election, you talk about grabbing married women in the crotch. I'm just being sensitive to the listeners, because the language, the words that they used, you know, when he was speaking to a reporter and he leaked it before he was elected. I don't know if it would had something to do with the fact that he was running against a married woman, so therefore he wanted to, you know, dispel any type of moral courtesies given to a quote unquote a lady. You know, he wanted to throw that out of the window, so they let him know that these married women, he can, you know, he can walk up to them and grab them in the crotch and with total consent. You know what I mean? You know, him being a billionaire, you know, of course that's always going to be understood, you know, to be a factor, you know, in him acquiring such quote unquote liberties. You know what I mean? Although he has about a half a dozen, you know, women who have come to the forefront now, you know, accusing him of sexual harassment, you know, but he's been able to fend them off. You know what I mean? Putting them in lawsuits and, you know, all kinds of stuff, because he has an army of attorneys that he keeps at his beck and. But one of the first principles of the University of Islam, I remember a story was shared with me when I was doing my research about my book, The Evolution of the Nation of Islam, which is available on the internet. Since Brother Musa told me he didn't have any problem with my using his blog program as a forum to make mention of that. But, you know, when I was doing my interviews, you know, it was shared with me, one of the principles of the University of Islam back in the 30s, you know, early 40s, you know, the police came and was questioning him, and the police officer told him, "You got just as much coon in you as me." Okay, you know, you sitting here talking. See, we were taught at the University of Islam, you know, that, you know, it had nothing to do with a person's color. Okay, we were told even the Turkish Muslims, you know, the flag we were given with the crescent and star, the Nation of Islam's crescent star, you know, swung opposite to the Turkish crescent star, same flag, you know, because, you know, the Ottoman Turks, you know, Master Farhad Muhammad was, you know, was known to have been a member of the with the Ottoman consul, you know, and that, you know, but we were told that the flag of the Turks, the Turks were referred to as Caucasian Muslim, you know, and so, I mean, being Caucasian, my grandfather told me, and it's mentioned in my book, you know, has nothing to do with their color. It has to do with their ways, you know, which Allah is against, you know. You know, a person is willing, I mean, and Minister Malcolm pointed out very well as well, you know, when he mentioned, he said, you know, white, he said, nobody is the color of a piece of notebook paper. You know what I mean? This whole, you know, this, how you say, white is a metaphor. You know what it is? Nobody, ain't no white people. Yeah, pink. Yeah, pink people. I'm a portrait artist. I'm an artist. I'll tell you point blank. They're not white. They're pink. If they want to use a color and say the claim that they're pink or some shade of pink. Okay, thereof, but they certainly are not white. Okay, this as Minister Malcolm pointed out, they want to think of themselves as being quote unquote pure. You know what I mean? And I mean, why they want to cast that perception? You know what I mean? You know, it's needs to be examined, you know, probably by a psychologist, you know. But any case, yeah. So you called and mentioned to one sister who you knew specifically, Brother Imam Musa, you know, that was Caucasian. But you know, there's a number of them, you know. But as long as they're not, you know, seeking, you know, to to identify with the privilege, you know, the privilege that separates, you know, the society of people of color, and seek to cloak themselves in the self righteousness, you know, and in the class oriented privileged society, you know what I mean. And those people who you call reference to, and as well as myself, you know, they were not seeking any kind of such privilege, you know. But anyway, I'm gonna leave the forum, you know, leave the, you know, to you to go forward on the table. You know, so I will do. You know, thank you for allowing me to share my views and. As-salamu alaykum.
Well, alaykum salam. We want to thank you very much for those very enlightening thoughts. And since you and I, at this point in time, are the only ones that have come into the family room for our forum, we're going to wrap it up. I just wanted to mention something back on the topic. I mentioned about the Mexican brother. He was very, very close to me. His name was Benjamin Perez, and I remember when I first joined the Nation of Islam out at Mosque 26, the name alternated between mosque and temple, but when I came in 1969, we were using the term mosque, and later we, for a while, went to the use of the term temple. And of course, I remember the occasion that prompted that when, and you were probably on the roster, Minister Jesus, Muhammad Ali, but the Honorable Elijah Muhammad were getting ready to begin this lecture, and someone said, "We haven't prayed yet." You know, we traditionally in the mosque would stand and raise our hands up with our palms facing skyward, bow our heads, and we would say this particular prayer. But at this particular event, which wasn't held in one of the mosques or temples, someone made mention of the fact that we haven't prayed yet, and then your grandfather gave a very, very succinct lecture about the difference between a mosque and a temple. And he said a mosque is a place where you pray at, and a temple is a place where you teach at. And shortly after that, word went out, and we began to call our mosque temples because we didn't have them set up to make the five daily prayers. But anyway, getting back to my point, so when I first came in, Mr. Benjamin Perez was in the student minister's class, and he took me under the wing. And I always, he's passed on now, may Allah bless him with paradise, but I always felt very warm towards him. And he brought a number, I won't say flocks, but he brought a number of Spanish-American, Mexican-American people to the Nation of Islam, or at least to hear the teaching. But getting back to the point, and I'll give you the last word, as they call it, Minister Jesus Muhammad Ali, we certainly thank you for joining us tonight. And please feel free to call me if you want to talk about some other topic offline after the show, which we will end in the next 10 minutes at least. But I want to make mention about something concerning this particular topic. And I don't want to give a lecture, but I study the history of higher education, and I study the history in particular of African-American so-called higher education. I even have a book that's entitled White Architects of Black Education. It's not in my hand right now, but it's in my study where I'm located right now. I can put my hand on it right quick. But the fact is that this whole idea of African-Americans becoming college graduates. Now, I'm a college graduate, and I'm proud of the fact that I achieved, you know, that distinction. But the fact of the matter is that the job that I had in the United States Navy that gave me the retirement pension that I am blessed to have from the military did not require a bachelor's degree. It didn't even require any degree. All it required was admission into the technical school, which some people may call a trade school, where the Navy taught me to become a radio communications technician and later a computer repair person, a computer technician. And the training that the Navy gave all of the people that enlisted in the Navy, most of whom, 99% of whom, when I enlisted, did not have any college degrees, gave them the opportunity to make a very good income in the Navy and receive a very good retirement, lifetime retirement income, which allowed many of us to buy nice homes and put away money for our parents in their old age, etc. So the whole concept that a person needed to have this college degree, and I'm not going to take any value away from anyone's college degree because I have a number of them, and they have helped me to become a college professor. But the job that really sustained me for nearly 30 years, actually two jobs, in fact, one of them was a cook. And, you know, I was trained in the U.S. military also as a cook and a professional baker, and even ran a small, what we call cottage industry bakery business overseas in Naples, Italy, for most of the 7 years that I was in the Navy station there, making fruit pies, particularly fruit pies. I also could make cookies and cakes and so forth. And it additionally brought money into my family treasury besides the money that I made in my day job, you might call it. And none of this required a college degree. So this whole concept that we needed to have this college degree, which many students are going into tremendous amounts of debt to earn with no guarantee that they're going to get a good job and be able to pay their loans back. And let me tell you something, and I know this for a fact. As you said, Minister Jesus Muhammad Ali, you cannot get out from under these student loan debts by declaring bankruptcy. That's one of the provisions of the law that allow the government to guarantee these loans, is that you cannot be discharged from these loans through bankruptcy. So that means that they're going to get your paycheck. They may even take your home if they can get to it.
Social
you know, whatever.
Security.
Yeah, and that too. And so a lot of these students, because they feel that they need to have this college education, when only, as we were saying in the title of the topic, 40%. Most of these HBCUs are graduating less than 40%. Less than 40%. So most of these students that are going to these HBCUs are going to schools where they don't have a union card, which a college degree is supposed to be a union card to get into these white-collar, managerial, high-tech type of jobs. These 40% graduation rate colleges don't give you that union card because of the competitive nature of jobs, that if there's a student from a state university, here, for example, in Georgia, where you know, we have students coming from all different kinds of educational, secondary educational backgrounds, and so the graduation rate here is about 65%. Not great, but still better than 40%. Now, there's a college right here in the town where I am. It's a historical black college, an old college, and their graduation rate, the last report was around 25%. Now, if a student, he could be bright, he could be a sharp, or she could be sharp student, was applying for a job, let's just say for an example, you know, in the field of marketing, okay, it doesn't have to be selling insurance or selling full of brushes. You know, it could be selling copiers, copier machines to businesses. You know, a good company, Xerox or some other company, and they're looking for management trainees, people with college degrees. And they've got this black student or white student from this black school that has a 25% graduation rate standing before them that's got a B-plus average. And they've got this white student from this predominantly white school in the state that's got a 65% average. Just on the basis of them having basically the same GPAs, maybe similar majors, that recruiter, that personnel manager is going to look at those two schools and say which one provided the best background as an instinctive for gaining success orientation qualities, because that's what they're looking for. And almost hands down, they're going to show that black student with that 25% graduation rate HBCU degree to the door and say, thanks but no thanks, you know, we'll call you, and the call will never come because they're not looking for people from failing schools. So these students are still going to have this high debt load on their back regardless. And many of them are going to these schools because they're easier to get in many cases and easy to slip out of as well, and they're still going to be on. So I didn't want to give a speech, but I'm just saying that I think, and I am an advisor to lots of students I try to encourage them to stay in school once they get in school, because whether they graduate or not, they're still going to have to pay back that money. They could go all the way up to the senior year. For some reason or another, don't get that diploma, don't get that degree, and they got almost 4 years' worth of student loan debt, and not have a degree, they're still going to have to pay that money. So I do encourage them to do their best to try to stay in school. But I would certainly, and this is my cap, this is my closing statement on this point, I would encourage the parents, all you all who are listening, whether you have children in college or whether you have children who have children in college or you have relatives that have children that may be getting ready to go to college, I would certainly, as a college professor and someone that's got a lot of student loan debt, because I got into situations to where I did not get scholarships for graduate school, and as a result, now I'm on a deferment while I'm working to get a higher level degree that hopefully may give me enough income to make it easier to pay off the debts. But the point is, I would encourage you to tell your loved ones, stay away from taking out student loans. Even if you have to space out your graduation for 10 years or whatever, work a semester, earn money to pay for the next semester's tuition, then go back and work some more. This is what Booker T. Washington established at Tuskegee. He called it the work-study program. You work a semester, you go to school a semester. You use the money from work to pay your living expenses and put the rest away to pay your tuition. It may have taken those students longer, some of them, when it took the average student in a white school 4 years to graduate. It may have taken some of these students 5 to 7 years to graduate. But at least they never incurred the debt that students are getting today. So I want to say thank you all for listening. Those of you who would like to say something before we close, the number to call is 657-383-0671. I'll keep the line open in case some of you that are listening want to call. I'm going to ask Minister Jesus Muhammad Ali if you'd like to give a concluding remark, and after you do that, I'm going to play some music, probably going to take about 2 or 3 minutes, just to give people that may want to call in a chance before we actually close. The number to call is 657-383-0671. And so now I'm going to turn it back over to Minister, to our special guest and our dearly beloved friend and brother, the grandson of the Honorable, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Minister Jesus Muhammad Ali. And then after you have given your remarks, we'll go ahead and play this music. So go ahead, Minister Jesus Muhammad Ali.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Ron. That's what I'm like again. Creating peace in paradise. Yes, sir. Yes. Commenting on, I want to go right back to where you had chimed in, referring to a Mexican brother that you had bonded with very closely, who had passed on. Man, I'm immersing that brother. So, see, the word Mexico, the word Mexican, I speak Spanish fluently. I lived in Mexico for a couple of years, even married a girl from there. It didn't work out, but nevertheless, Mexican means mixed, okay? And they are, you know, people who the Spanish, they married in with the Mexican or the they call them mestizos, or the Indian, Aztec, the Mayan, as I have mentioned earlier, I think on the programs, as far as my genealogy is concerned, my great grandmother on my mother's side is Mayan, and even with my grandfather, his mother, Mother Marie, please have mercy on her. So, I was raised up under, as a matter of fact, about 7 years old. She was my primary caregiver, one of them. they, I don't want to, you know, discount my mother, my parents, but in any case, her mother Marie, her she, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's mother, her father, which is, you know, was pure blooded Cherokee. I mean, you know, these are people who are, you know, called indigenous to this the Americas. Okay, so but then getting back to the Mexican, you want to use that reference, brother? You call a reference to in the southern country, in the southern states of this of these northern United States, Mexican people oftentimes considered as being third class citizens. You know, if a black person former slave, black person identified as such, is considered to be a second-class citizen, then Mexicans are considered to be a third-class citizens. I mean, I've seen the type of, prejudice, or, you know, searing discard, you know, but, because of many of them, you know, allowed to identify themselves as being Caucasian, so that, you know, oftentimes, you know, they don't run into situations where they will marry into, you know, other Caucasian groups, but, you know, in this country, but they are considered being third class citizens, you know. But now. You mentioned how even when you were in the service, and the skills that you acquired, you know, did not require in the first 30 years of your life, you managed quite well without any sheepskin, as they call it, college, you know, BA degree. You know, so, you know, it is truly, you know, a misnomer, okay, and that in the government, as you also, and I mentioned earlier, you know, these students, they can't even get out from under these debts, even if they file bankruptcy. This is truly an albatross, you know, that is placed, or a yoke that is placed on, and it seems like it's even almost might be construed as a government conspiracy, you know, to saddle, you know, these young people with this type of, you know, debt, you know, to carry the burden, you know, of the country, you know, by, you know, what's this? It's almost like a form of colonial servitude, you know, slavery. You know what I mean? To saddle them with that debt. And as a matter of fact, President Obama, he did a lot, tried to do a whole lot to, in order to reduce the interest rate, right before he went out of office. You know what I mean? Recognizing that, you know, this, you know, because, and oftentimes these degrees, you know, they, you know, people decide, you know, and we mentioned this on one of the previous programs, they decide what area they're going to go into without any real, you know, counseling to determine, you know, what the job market is for the degree that they're seeking to acquire a diploma in, you know, and they, you know, so that's all of that. So, you know, so counterproductive and hurtful, very searingly hurtful. You know, didn't have to spend all that time, you know, and I certainly appreciate some of the advice that you've given students of yours. But anyway, I'm going to, you know, relinquish the floor and the mic, and thank our listening audience again, and end with the greetings of assalamu alaikum, peace and paradise, as my grandfather oftentimes make clear, you know, that this is, you know, even to Jesus, Isa Salih Islam, he, you know, he would greet a person with that greeting. So he's who spoke the Aramaic and Hebrew. So I say Assalamu alaikum and thank you again.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much, Brother Mensajis Muhammad Ali. And now at this time, I'll give the number out again. So any of you that would like to call and give your opinion on this topic is the opportunity to earn a college degree from an HBCU with less than a 40% graduation rate, worth going into tens of thousands of dollars for student loan debt. If you'd like to offer an opinion, join the discussion on that topic before we close, you may call in now. The number is 657-383-0671. And I'm going to just play a little short piece, music rendition, while you are getting ready to call, if you're going to call. Between myself and our guest minister, Jesus Muhammad Ali, the grandson of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And we hope you will join us next Saturday evening at 8 o'clock p.m. And we will announce our topic later in the week. What we usually do is watch the news to see what issues are predominating. Dominating the news that relate to African American people as a community, and then we will usually pick a topic from those issues. So I don't know what the topic will be in advance until I've looked at the news throughout the week. But we can guarantee you that it will be a stimulating and intriguing issue for us to talk about. So at this time, may God bless you all. To enjoy the rest of your weekend, please try to be as safe as possible. We're living in very dangerous times. Watch your children. If you have young children, you probably recently heard about the three-year-old that was snatched from a playground area. Recently, they still have no idea where this child is or what has happened. So be very careful about your circumstances. Keep your eyes around you, alert to what may be going on, and try to stay out of bad weather and off of bad roads. And for whatever it may mean to you in terms of agreeing or not agreeing with the idea of drinking intoxicants, I swore off of intoxicants many, many years ago. Has kept me out of a lot of trouble. Whatever you do, please, we're getting close now to approaching the holidays. A lot of you will be going to holiday type parties and activities. Please, whatever you do, do not drink alcoholic beverages and then get behind the wheel of a car. It's not only your life that you will save by avoiding this. It may be the lives of many other people, because you can get in a car accident and cause a multiple car crash that so many people, innocent lives, may be lost. So just do not drink alcohol and driving. I'd also like to include, even though it's becoming legalized, and right now I don't know what the penalties are for having small amounts of marijuana or THC in your bloodstream, but I would advise you, do not drink and do not use drugs and get behind the wheel. So having said that, we're going to close out now, and we always like to close out with our black, as we call it, Black National Anthem. Lift every voice and sing.